Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Well, good morning. I'm Deborah Simpson, host of Speaking with Influence on Women Lead Radio. Today, my guest is Catherine Mowbray-Lawrence. Catherine started her speaking career early. To overcome her innate shyness at age 15, she enrolled in a competitive speech classes at her high school, winning awards of distinction and continued competing into her college years. From Singapore to South Africa to San Diego, Catherine has worked with motivated professionals, enhancing communication, igniting confidence, and developing competence. Her distinctive background and travel to 67 countries has provided her with a unique foundation to provide specialized, targeted training with her executive programs in presentation skills, cross-cultural understanding, and international business etiquette. Today, Catherine works with ambitious contemporary leaders to catapult their success in areas of communication, professional development, and leadership. Her elegant persona and diplomatic approach, served up with a charming British lilt and sharp wit, has been warmingly embraced by companies in healthcare, entrepreneurship, hospitality, and tourism. Catherine, welcome to the show. It's so nice to have you as my guest today.
Thank you so much, Deb. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, I know we've worked together on some speaking events, and I know you talk a lot about showing up powerfully. So when you say showing up powerfully, what do you mean by that?
Well, whether you're really showing up at a meeting or leading a presentation or making a presentation on stage, it's about minimizing your weaknesses. And many people don't know what they don't know. It's really important to emphasize strength. So, for example, when you are looking at the audience, what often happens is that your people's eyes just sort of wave back and forth over the audience, but you're not making eye contact with any single person in the audience, which is not a powerful presentation skills strength. Being prepared, showing up prepared, being confident, walking confidently, having good posture, not fumbling or bumbling with the mic, not using the lectern to hide behind, avoid steepling your fingers. And I just saw this last week, too, and I saw some workshop leaders who present fairly often, and they link their fingers at their waist. And that's a way for you to block your energy from reaching the audience, as well as blocking the audience's energy coming to you. So that's another little way, and it's a very subtle way that we use our body language to hide our vulnerability.
Yeah, I've watched, of course, being someone who's been around public speaking for a long time. I've been a Toastmaster in the county for many, many years. But I've watched often in the political arena right now hand gestures, and how hand gestures can be repetitive and somewhat annoying. When you coach speakers, how do you coach them on hand gestures to make sure that they're able to drive the point home without annoying their audience?
And I immediately got a visual of who you were maybe talking about and what his hand gestures look like. Well, it's an interesting thing. You should gesture to emphasize what you're saying and to bring power to your words and your phrases. And when you're not gesturing, just place your hands at your side. Let them drop down to your side. And that's not always an easy thing to do. We feel like our knuckles are dragging on the ground, or we feel that they're just loose and hanging there. And that takes a lot of practice. It takes practice in front of the mirror. It takes practice with videos to see how you present yourself. Some people do automatically gesture more than others. Speech, and if you have them hold their hands or tie their hands or restrict their hand movements, they would not be able to talk. But again, just minimize them a little bit. Use the hand gestures as a way to emphasize what you're saying. And women, don't use hands near your face. You know, don't be fiddling with your hair, with your earring, your jewelry, anything that anytime you gesture towards your face, it's a very distracting for your audience. And then if the speakers are presenting overseas, there's a whole other code of ethics and protocol to use as far as your hand gestures. Some are just not appropriate to use in international presentations.
You know, I think that's the skill that you bring to the table when you're talking to speakers, is that international point of view about how we do things here in the States versus how they do them across the Atlantic. And I've often been mesmerized when you talk about that. Maybe you could touch on a few of the international faux pas that speakers might find themselves in when they're in another country speaking.
Well, I certainly would be happy to do that. In fact, some of our presidents have made faux pas when they've spoken overseas. For example, there's some excellent books out, and they've been around, I think, since the 70s. And the hand gestures that were inappropriate in the 70s or 80s, in say, in the Pacific Rim or in Europe, are still inappropriate today. And one of those would be the peace sign. So if we wanted to do a peace sign to our audience, in other countries, sometimes people flip it and have the palm of their hand facing them. So when you have the palm of your hand facing them, facing yourself rather, and you do that to the audience, that's like using that impudent middle finger that we do in the United States. So that's basically, and I'm trying to think of what president it was. It might have been one of the Bushes, maybe Bush Senior, that flipped off, you know, it was done in Hong Kong, I think, and Hong Kong is a British Commonwealth country, or it was at that time, and in British Commonwealth countries, that's just flipping somebody off as you would in America, so that's pretty awful. The okay sign is a rude gesture in many countries. It's again like flipping them off. Germans start counting with the thumb rather than the index finger, and then sometimes the thumb in some other countries can be rude as well. So I have a LinkedIn article on some of those things. If people would like to follow me on LinkedIn, they can see some of my articles. And because it was right in one country, may be totally inappropriate in another country, and you would immediately lose your audience. You would insult them, and if you were doing any business with them, if you were making a presentation, to say in a boardroom, then you know, people would have a hard time following you after that because they would be insulted. And ignorance is no excuse. There's plenty of resources out there.
You know, that brings a thought to mind that if we create a faux pas like that, or just in speaking about hand gestures with, you know, one of the politicians that we currently all see on TV quite frequently, sometimes you're heckled by the audience or there's a reaction from the audience. I know that can be disarming for quite a few speakers. How do you coach your speakers in handling a reaction that comes from the audience that they're unprepared for?
I will use my own embarrassing moment, which taught me a lot. I was speaking after dinner to a group of trial lawyers, and I was on stage. I don't really remember what I was speaking about, but one lawyer had too much to drink, and he was in fairly close to the front row, to the front of the stage, maybe four rows away. And I was just talking, and I was moving across the stage with my lavalier mic, and I was doing well, and I felt really comfortable, and the audience was laughing at my humor. And this gentleman just, you know, half stood up and said, you know, what was my room number, or could I meet him afterwards for a drink, or could I come to his suite or something like that? And I just had a knee-jerk reaction as if he was hitting on me in a bar. And my reaction was totally inappropriate. And one of these reasons why it was, Deb, is that I had the microphone, I had the stage, I was in the power position, and he was in the audience. Now, if I hadn't been in a bar with him, my remark wouldn't have been, you know, commented on, or it wouldn't have been as disrespectful. But because I was in the position of power, it was like putting him down. And I actually did get some boos from the audience, which was the first time that ever happened to me. And I was just really thrown by that. But what was even more interesting to me is that it just came out in a snap. I didn't have even a second to think or qualify my words or restrain myself. I didn't swear or anything like that, but I put him down. And then I backpedaled a little bit and I smoothed it over as best I could. And so when you have hecklers in the audience, I mean, hopefully someone, which we see in our political figures and appearances all the time, hopefully someone, if you're speaking to a company, will step up and put someone down. But again, it usually occurs when people have had a couple of drinks. You know, after dinner is not the best time. No speaker really wants to speak too much after dinner unless it's humorous talk or entertainment. And just manage it as best you can. You can say things like, you obviously have some hot points around this topic. I'd love to talk with you further and see if we can come to some sort of resolution or middle ground, or I'd love to talk to you more about your viewpoints on this, and can we meet after I have this talk, but I only have so much time, and I have points I'm being paid to cover and by your company or whatever it is, and try to smooth it over that way as best you can. It's only happened to me a couple of times. One time I was speaking to an audience of American Express clients, and one gentleman, several of them were retirees, and one gentleman got up in the front row and his trousers fell down. And that was nothing I did. And he was going commando, Deb.
Oh, no.
So my challenge in that occasion in Tucson was to bring the audience back from, you know, hysterical laughter. And the poor chap, I mean, I think he was, I think he had some Alzheimer's or something like that. So he wasn't even aware, and a few people rushed over to help him pull up his trousers. And then I just had to get everybody back and be respectful to him. And so he was taken out by a mm-hmm. couple of people, and he was very confused.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about a few things that you do, that we do, that sort of disempowers our presentation. Can you talk about some of the things that we as speakers can employ that makes us much more powerful in our presentations? Are there skills that we are using that maybe we shouldn't use? Or there are things that come to mind for me are seeing people with PowerPoint presentations who, you know, read off the slide or walk in between the projector and the PowerPoint, so they, in essence, become the screen. How can we be as powerful as possible when we're up on the platform speaking?
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I was at a presentation last week, and one of the women who frequently gives workshops did not look at the audience. She just turned her back to the audience and looked at the slides. That is one of my biggest, you know, things that just irritates me so much, because, you know, why would you turn your back on the audience? She had her laptop. It was right in front of her. The slide is right in front of you, and the laptop should be positioned in a way that you're facing the audience, whether it's slightly to the side or it's completely with, you know, facing you as a speaker. Whatever's on your laptop, if you've prepped thoroughly and you've run through it a couple of slides with the screen, you know that what's behind you is showing on your laptop. So there's no need to do that. And then if people say the slide goes blank, the screen goes blank, then they can adjust it accordingly. But it's like an actor being on stage and having the back to the audience. I mean, that seldom happens. Look at TV when they set up a table. If people are eating around a table, you know, the table is positioned in a way and the people are positioned around it that nobody's back is to the camera, unless there's a specific reason why the filmmaker wants to do that. But they're all around the table with everybody being seen. So that's a big faux pas. I mentioned in an earlier comment of not making eye contact. And another thing that I think is really important, and Deb, you and I were at a workshop where this occurred, where the woman, the young woman speaking, did not speak to the intelligence level, the experience level, the seasoned executives that she was talking to. She did not have her speech presented properly for her demographics in the audience. And and I know that you and I exchanged glances across the room because it was just so basic for the audience, and it was just really unfortunate. So she wasn't properly prepared. Also, many people use the lectern or the podium as a crutch. Again, it blocks the energy between the speaker and the audience. I think it lowers the engagement. Sometimes you don't have an option. You have to use a lectern. But if you show up early and you've given your instructions to the meeting planner that you're working with, if that's the case, or whoever your company contact is, there's ways so that the lectern isn't actually completely locked down, that you can turn it sideways, put your notes on the side, and stand behind it. Make sure that the microphone is set up appropriately. Never say, "Can you hear me now?" That should all have been remedied and rectified before the presentation. So those are just a few of them that just get my back up, and I'm sure that you have some as well. But there's no reason for any of those things to occur. You just need to present as powerfully as you can. And for speakers who may not know what they don't know, look with different eyes as people are presenting. See how they are approaching the setup, the audience engagement. And look at people on TV and how do they make eye contact? How are they doing when they're interviewing if you're in a panel discussion? How do you work with TV cameras? I mean, I'm kind of going off topic there. That's another issue. But you just look with different eyes and see when you see a speaker who you really feel makes a strong connection with you, are there any skills that you can adopt yourself?
Yes, I think that sometimes we're inspired by seeing other speakers who have been around for a while and have command of presence on the platform or the DS, wherever they're standing. Just to take a side note right here, I'd love it if you would share how the listeners can get in touch with you to find out more about your speaking and coaching programs.
They're more than welcome to email me at Catherine, that's Catherine with a C, C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, at CatherineLawrence.com. And they can check me out on LinkedIn as well, but that email will get them through to through my LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Let's go on to talking a little bit about the power of using our voice, vocal variety, and some of those skills in our speaking presentations.
Yes, I was thinking about this morning because I was listening to a podcast and I didn't care for the woman's voice, and I just thought if I could just reach through the microphone and get her to go to a vocal coach. The only person, Deb, that I know who's done really well with a very horrible voice is Fran Drescher, right?
Oh, yes.
She played the nanny, was it in the 80s? I don't know. And she has a horrible voice and she's fabulous. And she has that whiny, nasally, irritating voice, but she's so funny with it, and she's a bright woman, and she's a great actress. Again, sometimes people don't know when their voice isn't as powerful as it could be. Your voice is your instrument, and it's your calling card, and it definitely should be heard in a way that presents authority, power, influence. People turn off shrill voices in women. Men especially don't respond to shrill or the higher voices. You have a great voice, Deb. Yours is a great tone. It has a great round quality, and it's on the lower end like mine is. And the little girly voice or the uptick at the end of the sentence drives me nuts. It's not powerful at all. And a lower tone is much preferred, I think. That can change by country again. sometimes it's not such a big issue, perhaps in East Asia, that you have a lower tone, but the quality of your voice should be full and not screechy. You can practice through recording and just make sure that it conveys your sincerity, your passion, your credibility. All of those qualities come through in your voice.
Yes, I'd have to say that the up talk, which is what they call it,
yeah,
when you're speaking to people and you want to end your sentence on an up talk, like you're asking a question, I'm not really sure when that started. It seems like it's been around for maybe 10 to 12 years. I think that that's something our younger professionals are accustomed to, and it's often difficult for more seasoned professionals like us who have been around the speaking circuit for many years to listen to, even in an informal setting like a business booster at or a business environment where you're listening to someone speak and you're in a networking situation and people uptick, like you said, or upspeak at the end. That is a phenomenon. Don't you think that's pretty recent? And definitely I agree with you that it takes away credibility because it's just not the norm in speaking. It's what you expect when people are asking you a question that they uptick at the end.
Well, and then they uptick at the end when it's even a statement, and I just don't think it conveys power. It conveys to me uncertainty and not being confident. I just remember years ago, it may have started with the Valley Talk. I don't know. Was that in the 70s? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And some of the audience who are listening going, oh, I wasn't even born then. But, it might have started then. It seems to be very much a West Coast speaking habit. And what I've seen too, which is, I understand that younger people do it. I don't like, and of course females do it more than males. Sometimes males do it. But what I don't like to see is when women who are perhaps in their 40s and they are mentoring or speaking to younger women in their 20s and 30s and then they adopt that speech pattern. It's not necessary at all. And I just think it does exactly the same for the more seasoned professional that it would for a woman who's 24. It just makes you look not that you're not confident or that you're uncertain. And that's always the opposite of what you want to convey. You always want to convey power, authority, influence, confidence. And so when your voice is hesitant like that or has any hesitant patterns, it's not presenting yourself in the best light.
And how do you work with professionals who are looking to improve their speaking skills?
I do that a couple of different ways. I can do it one-on-one consulting, and that is, you know, for people who want to move ahead really quickly, or perhaps they have a presentation at a national conference and they want to just present themselves in very powerfully and have this go over their speech and make sure everything's working smoothly. So I work one-on-one with them. And we'll do a tailor-made assessment to make sure that we're completely, I shouldn't say the royal we because it's just me, but I'm completely addressing their weaknesses so that we can move them through quickly. So I'll do an in-depth assessment. We'll have at least one telephone conversation. They usually will send me a recording of themselves, and I can look at that, maybe a video recording, and I can assess some of their weaknesses. And so I'm doing more online, but I also do the in-person work and just work with them, film them, and have them coach themselves. The video is such a powerful tool because you can immediately see, oh, yes, I'm rocking back and forth when I'm talking. Or for men, what they do very often is they have their hands in their pocket or they jingle their change or their car keys, so I make them empty their pockets right away. And the video is a very good tool. They can immediately see what they're doing wrong, and I don't even really need to guide them too much on that. But then we raise awareness so that they can see some things, that they maybe pace too much or they rock or they don't walk at all or their hand gestures aren't appropriate, and just work with them. I've also worked with some people on writing their speeches and making them more powerful, more sequential, and conveying the message that they wish to convey, and using powerful words when they do speak. And then also I can go into companies and do workshops for their executives, again, tailor-made, whether it's men or women or a mixture of both, and we can just bring them forward. And usually that's an 8-hour workshop. I have 8 and 16-hour workshops, so 1 and 2 days. And then if they are speaking overseas, sometimes professional speakers will ask me to work with them to make sure that they're appropriate in dealing with interpreters and working with interpreters, and that their vocabulary and hand gestures are appropriate for the countries that they're presenting in.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique perspectives you bring to the local speaking community is the knowledge of how to speak properly in front of an international audience and not just not create those faux pas. There was one more thing I was going to ask you. It completely slipped my mind. Isn't that awful? As you go and go and go and you forget to what you're going to say next. I should have written it down at that point in time. But last words would you say to? Oh, I know what it was. Who are some of the speakers that you admire the most?
Gosh, there's been some that have been around for ages and ages. I like Jack Canfield. I like Mark Victor Hansen. And I used to be in a speaking group with them before they launched Chicken Soup. So that was really fun to see their success. There are a few speakers from the National Speakers Association that I admire. And there are a few local speakers for those of the ladies who are listening to us in San Diego. Sarita Maven is excellent, and Colette Carlson is really wonderful. They're super. They're lots of fun. They're very polished, and they add a lot of energy and excitement to their talks. I'm trying to think of Og Mandino comes to mind. I've seen him speak a few times. And, trying to think of who else. I think Oprah is a fabulous speaker, and I think Michelle Obama is a fabulous speaker. I love them.
Yes,
I love
I
to
agree.
See powerful women on the stage, yes.
Yeah, I'd add one more local one, and I've interviewed her on this show, so the listeners can look in the archives over here at Blog Talk Radio or at Connected Women of Influence, and that's Cheryl Rausch.
She's
very powerful in the local Toastmaster community, which most of us begin our speaking by joining a local Toastmasters club. But I've had a great time interviewing you today and finding out more about what you do in your business as a way of helping speakers to be able to deliver that powerful presentation in every way, not only through their words, but through their gestures, through their body movements and those types
voices.
Of skills that we don't often think about. Yeah, voices, vocal variety. You don't want to be put to sleep by the speaker. So it's been great to have you here as a guest today. And I want to thank you for being on Women Lead Radio.
It was my pleasure, Deb. Thanks so much.
And our leading lady next week will be Terry Wilder, the owner of Wilder Vibes. And the topic will be Experience It, Be More Productive. I'm Deborah Simpson, host of Speaking with Influence. Thank you for spending time with me today and learning more about the art of speaking with influence. Remember the words of Napoleon Hill, think twice before you speak, because your words and influence will plant the seed of either success or failure in the mind of another.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.